So the first reading is from John 21, verse 4 to 11. And if you need a church Bible, raise your hands and one of the hospitality team members will give you a church Bible. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" "No," they answered. He said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, "It is the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment round him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 meters. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals. They were with fish on it, and some bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have just caught." So Simon Peter climbed back into the boat and dragged the net ashore. It was full of fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." This is the word of the Lord.
I hope you noticed that the day after Eliud Kipchoge broke the 2-hour marathon barrier, that we did a themed leaflet on marathon running. I mean, how relevant are we? You know, of course, all planned. We knew that that was going to happen. The miraculous catch of fish in John 21. Why was this event so resonant with the disciples? Well, the first reason why it was so resonant with them was that was deja vu. This had happened before, right at the beginning. Have you ever had a kind of deja vu moment, a feeling that, I think I've been here before? Jane and I love to go to the opera. Don't get me wrong, we're not opera boffs. We're nothing like that posh. I just like the spectacle of it, and we go very, very rarely because it's quite expensive and I never get around to booking anything up anyway. But one time I heard that La Boheme was on at the Colosseum, and I thought, I do like a bit of Puccini. And so I booked to go to La Boheme by the English National Opera at the Colosseum. We got there and we took our seats, and then we both had a deja vu moment because we remembered that the very last time that we had been to the opera, which was perhaps 3 years previously, we had been to La Boheme at the English National Opera at the Colosseum. And the production that we were about to witness was a rehash of exactly the same production, which is the very last one that we'd been to. So it was still a great evening. Not many surprises, it has to be said. But we had that deja vu moment. And the disciples had that same kind of feeling when they were in the boat. This had happened before, right at the beginning, when Jesus first called the disciples in Luke 5. Peter, James, and John had been professional fishermen on the Sea of Galilee. And on that occasion, they had worked hard all night and they'd failed to get a catch. And they'd come to shore and they'd met Jesus. And Jesus had asked to borrow their boat in order to teach the people from the boat. And then after he'd done the teaching, he said to Peter, put out into the deep water and let down the nets for a catch. And Peter had responded, Master, we worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the net. And we all know what happened next. They caught such a big catch that the fish filled two boats. They had to pull in another boat alongside to fill two boats to the point that they were almost sinking. And Peter was completely spooked by the event. He'd only recently just met Jesus, don't forget. And he said to Jesus, go away from me, for I'm a sinful man. And it's at this point that Jesus says, don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people. I expect you remember that passage in Luke 5. Now, I very much doubt that the disciples at that point had any idea what Jesus was talking about in saying, from now on, you will fish for people. But they gave up their fishing professions anyway and followed Jesus. And over the next 3 years, they were to learn what Jesus' mission was. And of course, the central teaching of Jesus' mission was the teaching about the kingdom. And Jesus connects the kingdom to fishing in Matthew 13. Sorry, I've gone the wrong way. There we go. In Matthew 13, he tells a parable about a fishing net. Says verse 47, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down into the lake. They'd seen that. And caught all kinds of fish. Now, immediately after telling that parable, Jesus asked his disciples, have you understood these things? And they say, yes. So the penny's beginning to drop. They're beginning to understand what Jesus is talking about. From now on, you will fish for people. The kingdom of God is like a net. It's let down. It catches all kinds of fish. And so when Jesus does the same thing in John 21, the reading that Kennedy read for us, as he had done back in Luke 5, this is a reiteration of their first calling. From now on, you will fish for people. And they would have known that. The disciples would have recognized that. They would have probably been saying to one another, hey guys, do you remember when this happened before? And then thinking, oh, now we're understanding. It's all beginning to make sense. Now, we understand that the commission that Jesus gave to those first fishermen disciples is now passed down to us. It wasn't just about them. It was never just about them. It is passed down the generations to us. That is our commission as well. This is us. This is what I was talking to you about last week. We want to let down the nets. We want to go over the other side of the boat and let down the nets. There's something a little bit crazy about it. You know, we've let down the nets before. We didn't get a catch, maybe. And we're thinking, oh, but with Jesus, you let down the nets on the other side of the boat because we're not dependent on normal courses of human activity. We are relying by faith on what Jesus is saying to us. And last week I tried to flesh out the things that we believe that the Lord wants us to be doing over the next year. What letting down the net for us is going to look like in the next season. You'll remember you got those Mission Aims cards. If you didn't get one, if you weren't here last week, they're over on the, where are they, Anne? The Mission Aims cards, they're over there. Actually, if you didn't get one last week, could we bring them round? Just stick your hand up, because we publish these once a year and they're really important for the direction of our church, the Mission Aims cards. Anyway, you would have got those last week if you were here. It's really about what we believe God is telling us to do in this coming year. And today, we are talking about how to resource that, and specifically how to pay for that. And we had that presentation by Sarah and by Peter just a moment ago. How are we going to pay for this pushing out, letting down the nets that the Lord is calling us to? And Peter said that it's going to cost us an additional more than 10%. It is actually going to cost us an additional 11.25% to do what we believe God has called us to do. What the implication of that is, if you are currently giving £100 a month, say, we need you to give £111.25 from now on. And of course, what we do is we round it up, don't we? We don't round it down, we round it up. Or if you're giving £500 a month, we now need you to give £556.25, rounded up. And if you're giving £1,000, we need to give you £1,112.50, and so on. Are you getting the picture? 11.25%. We need to do this. And if you're already giving, we want to say thank you so much. Thank you so much. But we do actually also need to raise our game. Remember, I was speaking last week on sowing and reaping. You're looking blank. I talked a lot about sowing and reaping. Just nod your head. Even if you don't remember, nod your head. Great. And we now have another reading from Kennedy.
So the second reading is from 2 Corinthians chapter 9. Verse 6 to 15, and that's on page 1099 of the Church Bible. Remember this: whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to bless you abundantly, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. As it is written, they have freely scattered their gifts to the poor. Their righteousness endures forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way, so that you can be generous on every occasion, and through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. This service that you perform is not only supplying the needs of the Lord's people, but it also overflowing in many expressions of thanks to God. Because of the service by which you have proved yourselves, others will praise God for the obedience that accompanies your confession of the gospel of Christ, and for your generosity in sharing with them and with everyone else. And in their prayers for you, their hearts will go out to. And in their prayers for you, their hearts will go out to you, because of the surpassing grace God has given you. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Kennedy. Great. So, the principle that God's work needs to be funded by the sacrificial giving of believers is absolutely established in the New Testament. And I want to suggest that there are two ways which we should look at funding the church and our part in that, our giving. Two ways. The first is what is generally called tithing, and the second is what we might call a free will offering. Let me first talk about tithing. Forgive me if you've heard me teach on tithing before, because you're getting it again. Okay? You are remarkable if you remember it, because it's some while. We need to do a little bit of myth-busting about tithing. Tithing is the practice of giving the first 10% of your income to the church. Notice I say the first 10%. So in other words, it's the first thing that goes out of your bank account, not the little residue at the end after you've spent everything. No, you give a first 10% and then you live on the remainder rather than the other way around. And there are two camps. If you've been a Christian for more than a few years, I would hazard a guess that you'll be in one or other of two camps with regard to tithing. The first camp is that tithing is the command of God. It's in the Bible, and therefore we should do it, and if we do it, we will be blessed. And the second camp is tithing is the Old Testament. It's in the Old Testament. It's not really taught in the New Testament, and therefore it's no longer relevant. So which is right? Which is right? Is tithing something that we should be doing today because we're commanded to do it in the Bible, or is it something that was in the Old Testament and therefore it no longer applies to us? Well, as is often the case, there is an element of truth in both, but there is also an element that both are not quite right. Tithing is an Old Testament command. Tithing actually only appears in three New Testament books, Matthew, Luke, and Hebrews. And it's only taught on in the book of Hebrews, and even then, it's quite obliquely. However, remember that the majority of the early church were Jewish. So they were coming from a practice where tithing was a requirement. It was part of their law. And I don't believe that it would have been the one practice that they simply stopped, and that the New Testament doesn't mention that they stopped it. I mean, it doesn't make sense, does it? So, of course, for the New Testament church, tithing would have been normative, because that's what they'd always done. That's what they'd grown up doing, and they continued doing that. It's interesting that the mentions in the Gospels, in Matthew and Luke, they come in the what we sometimes call the woe to you sections, where Jesus is really having a go at the scribes and Pharisees. However, the mentions of tithing, unlike the mentions of some other Old Testament commands, come out quite favorably. So in Matthew 23, Jesus says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, mint and dill and cumin." In other words, you tithe. You tithe. But you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. In other words, carry on your tithing, but make sure you address justice and mercy in these matters. So, is tithing just Old Testament, no longer relevant? No. No, it is Old Testament, but it is still relevant to us. Oh, there's that text. It is still relevant, not as a law, but as a grace. Now, some have reacted to perhaps the excesses and even manipulation of some quarters of the prosperity gospel teaching by kind of chucking out the baby with the bathwater. Is tithing to be adhered to? Not as law, but yes, as grace. And if it's a grace, then we're no longer limited to 10% because we're free. Galatians 5:13 says this, "For you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity to indulge your flesh, but through love serve one another." In other words, we don't abandon the Old Testament law in order to live doing whatever we please. Think about what Jesus said on the Sermon on the Mount with regard to the Old Testament law. He said, "You've heard it said," and then he quotes an Old Testament law, "but I say to you." So you've heard it said, do not murder. But I say to you, anyone who gets angry is subject to judgment. Or you've heard it said, do not commit adultery. But I say to you, anyone who looks on a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. You've heard it said, anyone who divorces his wife should write her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you, anyone who divorces his wife causes her to become a victim of adultery. Now, let me ask you a question. When Jesus takes the Old Testament law like that, does he lower the bar or does he raise the bar? Which do you think? It's up, isn't it? He raises the bar. Every time he raises the bar. So let me apply this to our giving. I think you see where I'm going on this, don't you? If the Old Testament law, you've heard it said, give 10%, what is Jesus going to do? Is he going to lower the bar? No, he's going to raise the bar. I know you don't want to hear this, but he's going to raise the bar. So let me just speak to those of you who have rationalized that tithing is Old Testament. We don't need to do it anymore. Are you now giving more or less than a tithe? Because if you're giving less than a tithe, less than 10% of your income, are you not using your freedom as an opportunity to indulge your flesh? I think it's a fair question. Now, you have heard that St. Barnabas is now facing a great financial challenge. A great financial challenge. Possibly one of the biggest financial challenges we've ever faced, needing to raise 11.25% additionally year on year. And so far, despite extraordinary generosity by many people, so far we are falling short. We actually ran a deficit last year, and this next year is more expensive. And you know what? That should not be. That should not be in God's church. We should have sufficient money, shouldn't we? So that we can pay our staff really well, so that we can give money away incredibly generously to our mission partners and other things, so that when we see a new mission project, a new great opportunity that God is laying out before us, that we're not automatically saying, oh, no, we can't afford to do that. It should not be that we're under-resourced. If we take the principle that Jesus raises the bar, 10% becomes where we start. Jane and I have always tried to make 10% of our income the place where we start, and then we try to do better than that, a starting point. Because we want to live out our lives generously. We want to be open-hearted and open-handed with our money and our resources. And also we want to avoid money becoming an idol in our lives, getting too much of a hold on us. And so one of the ways to avoid that is to splash it around a bit. You know, give it away. And if you're sitting here, and I believe there are many people like this, thinking, you know, well, I want to honor God with my money, with my giving. How much should I give? And I would say to you, well, 10% is your starting point. Start with 10%. You might say, well, I want to be free. Oh, yeah, you can be free. You can give more. You can give more. So, I want to give what the Lord shows me to give. Great. He might show you a whole lot. He has a tendency of doing that. You might say, well, I want some guidance. Give me a figure. I would give you a figure, 10%. It's a good starting point. Now, some of you who haven't heard teaching on tithing before will be saying, ooh, that's huge. It's huge, 10%. Oh. And yes, it is a lot. And, you know, if you've got other commitments, your money is all accounted for, it may take you a while to build up to that. We recognize that. We don't want you to be running yourself into terrible debt or financial difficulties. And you may have to adjust some things in your lifestyle in order to be able to afford that. And that's okay. So maybe you need to start with 5% and work up. But let's not be under any misunderstanding. That's where we're aiming. That's where we want to get. After all, isn't all of our money God's money? It's all of our money. If you've given your heart to Jesus, everything you have is his. And think of it this way. He allows you to keep up to 90%. What a great deal that is. Now, many Christians do give 10%, but split it. And perhaps they give 5% to the church, and then they give the other 5% to various projects or charities that they're particularly interested in. And I want to suggest that if you're doing that, you are confusing a tithe with a free will offering. The free will offering is also an Old Testament concept, and it isn't specifically mentioned in the New Testament at all, although the principle is described a lot. And it was an offering given in response to a particular need or as a special act of worship, perhaps in fulfillment of a vow, or as a special act of thanksgiving that something really wonderful has happened to you and you want to thank God and give praise to God and show your gratitude, so you give an extra gift. The gift that the believers laid at the apostles' feet in Acts 4 were free will offerings. You remember Barnabas, after whom we're named, he sold a field and laid the money at the apostles' feet. It was a free will offering. He didn't have to do that. It wasn't part of his tithe. It's just he was overflowing in gratitude to God and wanted to give extra. Paul's third missionary journey, where he was making a collection, it was a free will offering in response to need, different to the regular tithing to the church as an ongoing commitment. So in summary, the first 10% is where we start giving to the church. That, of course, doesn't stop us from giving to those charities that we love to support, those things that we're interested on top of that. We're free to give more. Those are our free will offerings. Jane and I, we like to start by giving at least 10% to the church of our income, and we like to try and exceed that. And we've recently upped our giving again because we want to respond to what God is doing here at St. Barnabas. And then thereafter, we also give to various charities and projects that we feel a particular connection to. One of those was, until this year, the Go and Grow project. That was an extra thing that we gave to because we felt that we wanted to commit to that. And those are our free will offerings, and they're sometimes in response to need, sometimes in as a just a special act of worship or a special act of thanksgiving. And have we found that hard? Yes, at times we found it hard because we are... have been giving away a lot. And that's not always been easy for us. And yet, we know the Lord's blessing over our lives. We know the Lord's blessing even over our finances. God has been good to us. Because God loves generosity. He promises to bless abundant generosity, not necessarily financially. It's not a kind of formula where we give to God and we expect to get back. But if we give, if we live open and generous lives, surrendering ourselves wholeheartedly to God, even surrendering our money to God, we will know the Lord's blessing in our lives.